look at RSS blogs or blogs on RSS feeds, Old Daily, I don't know when you started that, but it's got to have been, how many years have you been doing this?
The email version started in 2001.
Okay. So it was one of the earlier places on the web where events around various things that I guess would loosely fit under e-learning, if we know whatever that means anyway, are categorized, logged, and usually commented on. The thing about Steve's blog that is different from many is that there's usually a one-paragraph description or more associated with whatever the link is or topic. So he actually doesn't just aggregate and resend, but actually reads things. And while you may or may not agree with all of the things he says, at least there's something to respond to, which is often helpful. So Steve is in town serendipitously for a e-learning conference, I guess, that's happening in Boston this week. Who's that sponsored by?
That's e-learning guild.
The e-learning guild.
It's more corporate. Corporate.
Guild is the right, I think, descriptor for the space that we're in to a large extent.
Yeah.
And he sent me a note asking about getting together here on campus, and that led to the email that you guys received. He sent around, and I provided the link in the note, a list of what he's doing now, which I thought was interesting, because people always ask, what are you doing now? not too many can point to a URL and say, just read this. But he has one of those, which is kind of interesting. And the general topic is around ways in which useful educational information can be assembled, brought together, that honors the perspective and the position or the point of view of the learner who's looking and searching for the information, as much as a standardized set of descriptors that might be sort of deterministically assembled to pull them together. So I thought it would be fun to just get together with people that might be interested in the topic. Just a chair around the table.
I'm fine with it.
And give Steve an opportunity to sort of describe what the heck that means. And then all of us an opportunity to question or try to probe a little bit deeper. Some of us in this room, I know, attended Tim's boot camp in January on the semantic web, which was a week-long event trying to penetrate some of the fog around what the semantic web is. And I have to say, as someone who attended most of it, that the fog only partially lifted from my perspective. And I know that one of Stephen's perspectives on this is essentially, correct me if I'm misstating this, but that the whole approach to the semantic web and its descriptive mechanism is, in one sense, in your view, both either limited or flawed, as being unlikely to result in the kind of organizational retrieval such that people want to be able to achieve for educational objectives. So, with that, let me turn it over to Steve. We've all gone around and introduced ourselves, except for the people, or I introduced, except for people who came in late. But let's quickly just say who you are and where you're from. So I'm so long. Since I was born in California. And I'm at the new Office of Educational Innovation and Technology.
Kirky DeLong, Center for Educational Computing Initiatives. Alex, as we skipped.
Alex Pringle, IS&T, third party software.
I'm Katie Vale, also from OEIT.
Scott Shunk, I'm the program director for Advising Cultures.
BJ, also from the Office of Educational Innovation and Technology. Welcome.
Kimberly Coyle, I'm at
I'm Steve Carson, I'm from MIT Open Courseway.
I'm Molly Ruggles, I'm with SMA, which is a distance education initiative.
I'm curious, I'm also with SMA.
I'm Andrew McKinney, I'm with ISDA.
I realize it's right around the corner.
You too.
I have the next one.
I'll look them all up later.
Josh.
I'm Josh Resti. I'm with that form.
I'm Peter Wilkins. I'm with the IT.
And we got our time. Yep.
That's it.
Well, thanks for the welcome. I really appreciate that. And for those of you who came late, I will point out that I am recording this, so don't say anything that's too incriminating. Otherwise,
he's already said ISD at the end.
He'd be all over the web. The main thing that strikes me, other than the fact that I'm at MIT, which you have to realize I'm from a small city in New Brunswick, Canada, so coming to MIT is a wee bit intimidating, but I'll live with that. But the funny thing is that, and I should have brought my computer because you all have the same computer that I have. I just got it, so I'm still figuring it all out. So it's quite surprising to me. Yeah, you should have known. Yeah. And there's another one.
This is an Apple.
I'm really quite astonished. I didn't bring mine because you all know the power cord and all of that doesn't fit into the carrying case. So there was no easy way to bring the plug in. I'm not going to bring the computer if I can't plug it in. Obviously, that wouldn't have been a problem. Oh well, live and learn. What do I want to say? What do you say when you come from New Brunswick to MIT? Last time I saw Phil was, I believe, in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I went to Colorado to talk a bit about semantic web and all of that sort of stuff. But what I left Colorado with was a talk by Charles Vest. You probably remember the talk by Charles Vest.
This was the Seminars in Academic
Communication. Oh,
yeah.
Same stuff.
Yeah. And what he said was, what he was trying to do is to explain the success of the American university system. Me coming from Canada, I sat in the audience and got all cynical. But you know, he said things like the U.S. System supports diversity, and the U.S. system supports autonomy. And so I sat there and I'm thinking, well, okay, the university system promotes truth and all of that. That's you know, the theory, anyways. And here are these things, diversity, autonomy. Now, I've studied truth. My background is in philosophy. I've spent way too much time studying truth. You know, Tarski semantics, and correspondence, and all that. And nowhere in any of this was stuff like diversity and autonomy. And so that sort of set me off. What I've tried to talk about, of course, you know, again, come to MIT, it's like bringing coals to Newcastle. I'm not going to come here and start talking about connectionism and things like that. But what I've been thinking about so far is locating educational resources, which is what has prompted me to go off on this whole tangent, was that the materials could be found based on their placement in the network. And what I mean by that is that if you think of the material and the person as being, there being some sort of line between them, then that line is defined by the network. And if the network is organized properly, then that line is shorter. It's a more direct route from the resource to the person. So that if the network is organized ideally, then it's a one hop. But it's never ideal, so we'll leave that aside. So I'm thinking about that, and of course, when we talk about networks, we talk about a different sort of knowledge than the sort of knowledge we talk about when we talk about Tarski semantics and all of that. We talk about a type of knowledge that is, to use the jargon of the day, emergent, right? It's network that arises from the organization of the network and is not inherent but has to be recognized, has to be noticed or seen or perceived. So I've got, on the one hand, diversity and autonomy, and on the other hand, trying to figure out some way to describe the way a network should be organized in order to best deliver learning materials. And what occurred to me in Colorado, and so thanks for the invitation, was that diversity and autonomy and these sorts of things, and I've gone on to list a few others of them, describe the properties of a network that will most reliably lead to, well, in my specific case, locating resources for a particular application, but more generally lead to emergent knowledge that is reliable. And that's what I've based a lot of the work that I've done since then on. And I know it's very fuzzy, and it's fuzzy to me. So
backtrack for a second. You started with you set up the EDU RSS project.
Correct.
Are people familiar at all with the EDU RSS project? And if not, maybe you should give 2 seconds about what that was or is.
Yeah.
Let me close the door.
Yeah, and if you really need to see it, we can probably display it. But what EDU RSS is, I'm sure you're all familiar with RSS. Okay. EDU RSS is, in simplest form, a harvester. It aggregates RSS feeds. And then the purpose of this is to bring them in, organize them into topics, and then deliver them to subscribers. And at heart, that's all EDU RSS is. But a lot of the work that I've done in EDU RSS has led me to think about how RSS should be structured and how, what the syntax of a network of RSS and similar feeds should look like.
So what was EDU RSS simply in order to, you have to intervene and choose where the sources are that you wish to aggregate.
Sure.
And it sounds like what you're moving towards is a way of making that selection, that process of aggregating content that you began as just a deterministic, I'll make a list of things based on whatever information sources I might have available to me. But now you're trying to move towards something that makes that that process somehow relational or dependent on the environment and the question or the topic area.
Yeah. Yes and no.
Okay.
Because I still think, and I don't think this is too controversial, that the selection of sources or the selection of feeds is something that can benefit from a human input, a person just picking the feeds. In my mind, what that creates is a node in this network, a second layer node. So the first layer is all the original RSS feeds from all the people, and then the second layer is the set of clusters of feeds that are aggregated by individuals. And so I just see myself as being one of those second layer nodes. You know? And I think this is kind of what distinguishes my approach from a lot of the web 2.0 stuff that we see, where they want to be the whole thing, right? I just want to be one little node, and I want to see a whole bunch of other nodes in the second layer. And at the simplest form, you have the feeds, second layer node, and then the consumers. But of course, once you get the structure going, you have the potential for many more layers.
How would the other nodes relate to yours? In other words, would they just be other people's choices of what the sources should be?
Right. Yeah, the others in that second layer would just be other people's choices. So I'm trying to design EDU RSS as an application that individuals would have. Each individual who's setting up one of these nodes would have something like EDU RSS, or would have a mechanism for selecting and organizing feeds, would have a mechanism for combining and recombining. It was original, I think, when I did it. It's not that original anymore, because there are projects out there now that are doing that. The most famous recent one, I guess, being Yahoo Pipes.
Yahoo Pipes. I guess the question that's the weakness or what you're seeing as the drawback of that is part of what's motivating your current thinking. In the sense, in terms of, the EDU RSS essentially requires that the learner have a sense of the discipline area and the topics that they're really looking for before they start.
Well, yeah, I somebody sent me something like that, saying pretty much the same thing just recently. I don't know. Well, because, I mean, what I've been saying in the last few days, and I've said this fairly consistently, mm-hmm. is that people, and it's badly phrased, people should subscribe to topics rather than people. The way RSS has always been set up, you subscribe to a person. You know, it's the original Netscape NetCenter was that way, and
right.
I've never agreed with that. And so I say, no, people should not subscribe to people. That just perpetuates this, you know, media guru, star, celebrity kind of thing, and it narrows your perspective. Rather, people should subscribe to topics so that on any given day, any person who's writing the blog in the field has a more or less equal chance of appearing in that topic. Now, maybe the word topic is badly chosen. When I think of the word topic, like most people, they think maybe keywords, maybe categories.
Well,
somebody
wrote
me
a tag.
Physics. Sure, tag. Yeah. I do topics differently in EduRSS, and nobody else does it like this. I don't know why, or at least that I've seen, but. I define a topic as a regular expression. And the reason why I define it as a regular expression is because it gets around all the limitations of keywords and the different vocabularies that people use, and it gives me a very expressive way of defining something that isn't precisely definable. It's you know, a topic is like a cluster. It's you know, a concept area, not identifiable by specific words.
Mm-hmm.
Just as an aside, I think the words, just generally, I think when we use words to do any of this stuff, that it really constrains us and often misleads us, because we have this belief that when we say the same word, and this is what I had to say in Colorado, right? We have this belief that when we say the same word, we mean the same thing. And I'm quite convinced that that's not true. In fact,
daily conversation tends to reinforce that.
Well, yeah, this is what kills me. Like, you see examples of people cross purposes all the time, and yet we have this myth that words mean the same thing to different people. I have no idea why. So.
I would argue that words don't even mean the same thing to me.
Well,
depending on time of day or what you can find. Is that what
right. you're actually looking at this site right now. I'm noticing you both have topics, but and you have tags. Did you add the tags
right.
later, or did you?
Oh, wow.
Well. But also, notice a lot of them are like the same topic
yeah.
of growing, changing, learning, creating.
Okay, I'm not sure exactly what you're looking at,
yeah,
but that's cool.
If you want to project.
Oh. Yeah, sure. Why don't we? Yeah, we could do
no.
that. Sure. No, the tags that you see on my site is me engaging in marketing. They're not tags. They're not tags properly so called. They're my topics. Because I use regular expressions, I don't need to actually tag anything. I just run the. I write as Phil said. I write my 100 word description. I've discovered that. My best essay is 100 words.
Everything after that's downhill.
Everything after that. Fluff and repetition and citing sourcing, all that stuff I don't want to do. So.
Oh, thank you.
Well, that's what that's used for. It came in the. It's still. Mine is still in the wrapper.
Well, then you
and I can carry it everywhere.
Carry it. Please,
yeah, so I just use I just run the regular expression on the 100 word excerpt, and that matches to one of my categories. The categories all have a title, and so the title becomes my quote unquote tag. And I figure that's just as good a method for tagging as just picking a word out of the air. So, yeah, that's all the tags are.
It's not going to work.
It's not going to work. Oh, yes. Power generally does make a difference with those things.
Since we haven't quite got the induction table down yet. Plugged in. Let's try again. Plug right here. So, an example of the expressions are your expressions are one word, action words, being, becoming, learning?
No, there's no particular purpose or sense in the words that I choose. Okay, what you see, like if you see one of my posts and it'll say tags and then whatever. Right? The tags are just titles. The title is, and I'll show you this once we get this going here. I'll sign into the site and you can see it.
Oh, okay.
They're titles referring to regular expressions. So I give the regular expression a title, which is kind of cheating, but it works. Yeah, Firefox is perfect because I really don't know how it'll respond on Internet Explorer. Not that you have it anyway. Oops, I guess it'll work
there's
better
another
with the slide.
Okay, everybody take note.
No, this is better than the other one where it actually does display the password. I'm actually not a very good programmer, so. Oh, I don't want to be remembered. Oh, cool, thank you. Except it's one of those mice. I don't know how to work. Okay, not now.
What's the way you think it would work?
What?
No, don't do that. Don't do that.
Not now. Go away, whatever that was. All right. This is the back end of my site. And okay. So this is the stuff that I use to actually create my newsletter. What I want to do and where this is going, RSS, the way RSS is set up is simply to describe resources like newspaper articles or blog posts or whatever. I really think that there should be a set of different types of RSS feeds, I actually drew a diagram once, RSE, really simple events, RSP, really simple people, yeah, I like that one too, RSO, really simple organizations, because all of these things can be expressed in RSS with very, very minor modifications to the format. Because pretty much everything has a title and a description and a link. RDF 101, everything has it. And then over and above that, like events, well, what do you need over and above that? Well, not much. You need a start time, you need an end time, you need a location, you've got an event. Right? People. I don't think. Oh, yeah, here we go. So I couldn't actually get much beyond name, description, email. Journal, title, link, description. Maybe I could give it an address if I really felt motivated. So eventually, where I want this to go, and I sort of described this in a paper called The Semantic Social Network, is that you have these different kinds of RSS feeds, and then the feeds link up to each other. So, for example, when you have just your regular RSS feed with a blog post, you put in a link to the author, or you put in the author, but instead of the string, strings are bad, instead of the string, you put the URL of the RSP feed for the author, and then you might have the string or after that, but what's authoritative is the link to the RSP feed. Now, people talked about FOF, and FOF never really took off, probably because it was RDF, but no, I shouldn't say that, but it didn't take off, and my thinking is it didn't take off because the posts were over here and the FOF files were over there, and never the twain shall meet. Anyhow, so that's where this software is going eventually is, as I collect, and now I've got whole lists of things.
Well, before you go there, backtrack for a second. Mm-hmm. The FOF file, which is the friends of a friend.
Friend of a friend, yeah.
And in some extent, it looks very much like your people on steroids, in the sense that it's got, you know, potential to add half a dozen, 15, 20, 30 other descriptors, such as, you know, your salient childhood events and various other things in a structured way. So, but conceptually, it doesn't sound much different from this.
No. The difference is the emphasis. The core of the folk was your list of friends, right?
Right.
And then the description was over and above that. And you sort of see that. You have a whole social network thing, linking people to people and all of that. But again, linking people to people only takes you so far. You want to link people to the things they created. You want to link people to the organizations that they work for or belong to or don't like or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know? And that gets you a much richer tapestry, a much richer network. And you know, and it's funny because, you know, way back when, 5-10 years ago, when they came out with RDF, I thought, okay, this is what they're going to build, and it never happened. So it's always puzzled me. So I'm trying to build a system that's one node in the network. And remember, this is me doing my programming, so it goes very slowly. But here are my topics. Again, the names are just names. And here's the regular expression. And I also have description, but I don't really have much of a description. So what this regular expression says is, it's basically a string, right? So the string begins here. And either the word audio or voice or music or sound, then a space, and then either the word recording or conferencing or chat or communication, and then a space after that, just in case. Or, instead of all that, Skype. And I could, you know, add or whatever. And so now that means like sound recording, music conferencing, which makes no sense, but who knows, somebody may invent it one day. Audio chat, you know, voice chat. Any of these strings will match my category. So I've captured a very broad range of things with something very simple, which is why I really like regular expressions. That plus the fact that once I've designed it, I don't need to do any coding, because the code is built in. This is all built in Perl, so once I've written the regular expression, I've written the thing that actually does the work for me. So it's a one-liner. I much prefer this to tagging. And one of the reasons why I prefer this to tagging is because when a new concept comes along, say podcasting, remember podcasting was invented in 2003, but people have been doing this sort of stuff for a long time, audio conferencing, audio recording, all that. So podcasting came along, I just created a new topic, podcasting, put in the proper words, you know, audio, all of that sort of thing, very similar to this actually, and then hit submit, and not only did any future submission on that topic get tagged as podcasting, but any previous submission on that got tagged as podcasting, because it took like about 2 seconds to index the entire database, because it's only little 100 word essays.
So
it's
true. This might be naive. So when RDF said, you know, I don't care what kind of it's a very inclusive approach,
mm-hmm.
right? It says, I don't care what kind of metadata, give it to me, we'll absorb it.
Right.
But it still assumes that from search to search, there is something that is consistent.
Right.
Right. So in this approach, this sort of a free-form semantic approach, what is consistent from search to search? Well, what in terms of the behavior of searching? Because part of all this whole thing about RDF technology is to have some kind of consistency in terms of describing what needs to be searched and having some search behavior that is consistent across topics. So are those items what is consistent?
I'm not really stuck on consistency.
It's not, but I mean, the idea is, you know, facilitating, you want to be facilitating, you want to say something as a learner,
Let me answer the question differently than it was asked. In RDF, all the interpretation of the semantics or whatever happens in the system. It happens in the descriptions, the ontologies, all of that. In this system, none of the interpretation happens in the system, or just a little tiny bit. All the interpretation happens in the user. So what guarantees your consistency is you, right? The same person doing search number one, search number two. Okay, and of course, you know, if you go across people now, you don't have consistency anymore. But why would you? Why would you want that? So, you know, so I think that's
good. Really, are you imposing any kind of direction? I won't call it control. Any kind of influence or direction on the source who is providing the corpus of this research?
Yeah, the very least amount of direction possible, which of course is, you know, the minimal RSS tags, title, description, right? And then if you want to throw in some other tags, start in. And any adoption of a tag is based not on specification or stipulation, but rather on use.
Do entries or, you know, I'm not sure what to call them, like database items, but conceptually you have something you think of as one thing you input into this. Do they have any uniquely identifiable descriptor? Because I can think of, you found something yesterday, but now I can't ever find it again.
URI. Like in my database, everything, absolutely everything has an ID. You need a primary key. It's just, but I don't really use them a lot. But they have them.
Okay.
But I don't see that as essential to the system. I see that, but I see it as useful. And I could see how people can use these, but I don't see there being any like definitive handle system version of keys or whatever.
So, Stefan, how does extrapolate? You've got this particular aggregation that you're putting together and the like. OCW has aggregations of content that have a focus of course material and such. How would this apply to the content, for example, that you would see typically associated with a course?
Yeah, same, okay. And I actually, when I built Edge URSS, I also built something called, and I'm kind of abandoning it, but it's still there, and I'm still coming back to it, called DLORN, Distributed Learning Object Repository Network. Now, learning objects are, you know, not vogue anymore, but that's an aside. Same concept, though. In OCW, it's a bit different because there's, you know, containment. There's things belong to other things, but we'll leave that aside. In this RSS thing, my approach to that sort of thing is just to stick a parent tag in it. And parents is really useful. Actually, Luke Bellavo taught me that. He's our computer person at NRC. I always thought in terms of children, not parents, and that gets confusing. But you put a parent, you know, like you're organizing events. If one event is part of another event, you just put a parent tag in, and now my seminar belongs to this conference, etc. So I think that one tag solves all kinds of problems. But essentially, I simply treat a learning resource like any other resource. Now, in my ideal world, the learning resources are created in something like consistent format so that they can be played on players. But you know, I don't really insist on that. The thing is, you know, title, description, link, maybe authorship. And then that gets fed into the system. Now you might think, okay, well that's really useless. And yeah, that's, you know, it's about, you know, about as useful as, well, I'm not going to try for a metaphor here. But now, what you want to happen now, as this resource continues to exist and continues to be used over time, you want to gather information about this resource. And I describe this under the heading of resource profiles. The idea here is that you launch it into the world with title, description, link, and then somebody reads it and says this is good and gives it a thumbs up, and they input that, the ratings are coming into EduRSS, what I just about had them, and then I rewrote the system so they're not there anymore, but they're coming back. You give it a rating, now you've created some new information, some new metadata, and these ratings now become part of the description of that resource. Now, of course, there are all kinds of different kinds of rating systems. There's the Siskel and Ebert. There's the 5-star rating system. There's the appropriate for people of the Latter-day Saints. All kinds of stuff. There's no standard rating. There's no single set of ratings. There isn't even like a global everybody in the world who ranked this on the 5-star rating. Right? There's a whole mishmash of ratings. But these ratings accumulate and become part of the description of a resource. And so you can see right off the bat how that's going to begin to help ordering your resource. And of course, your ratings are attached to people. So now you've got a three-way relation, right? Resource, rating, person, which of course is the core of the recommender system. So now once you've described people, you've got people, properties of people, the ratings, the resource, properties of resource, and you can begin to extract from something very simple like this, statements like people who are like such and such, rated resources that are like such and such, so and so. Which means that if you have a new resource and you're able to look at it, find out what properties it has and what properties the users are likely to have, you have a pretty good idea of what sort of rating it's probably going to receive. So that gives you a bit of a predictive capacity.
For this model to work, it seems like what you need is like a cadre of people sort of at the node level who are functioning as sort of pulling up things and interpreting and providing the providing that for the people who are actually going to be using that. Is that correct?
I think that such a cadre would be useful, but I always count on the laziness of people, which means that you want to capture as much of this stuff in passing.
Can anybody be a node? Is it sort of like a
anybody.
Self-selecting thing?
Anybody can be a node.
Okay.
Everybody is a node in one sense or another. Suppose you're in a physics class, mm-hmm. right? And you're just working the system and you find a resource and you use that resource in your presentation. Well, now you've just created, without actually going to any effort, you've created metadata about that resource. This resource was used in this context. Contexts, again, have properties. It's a physics class. It's at MIT. It was in 2007, etc. And so, again, we've got another one of these relations, but nobody actually did any work, right? And so in resource profiles, I map out the various types of metadata that constitute such a system. The first party metadata, which is the biographical metadata, who created the resource, what the copyright is, title, description, link. Second party metadata is metadata about the use of the resource. So it's when the resource was used, how the resource was used, where the resource was used, any of that sort of information. And then third party metadata is metadata created by ostensibly objective or disinterested third parties. So it'd be ratings, categorizations, all of that sort of thing. The topics that I have constitute third party metadata.
Mm-hmm.
And so I believe, and this is empirically testable, that when such a system of dense connections exists, and if such a system has the properties that I describe, that describe what I would call successful networks, and I could do a definition of successful networks, but we'll leave that aside, then that sort of system will be sufficiently robust that it will not be necessary to search for resources. That the resources will be able to present themselves to you depending on what you're doing at the time. That's my belief. And that's the hypothesis.
how close do you think you are to actually being able to demonstrate this?
I have no idea. honestly, because I'm so slow at programming.
Will there always be a part of sort of what's out there that hasn't been processed through this?
Oh, sure.
So that it's not totally encompassed? Or
oh, I don't. There's no requirement that it totally encompass everything. It's like, you know, it's like the FBI criminal information profiles. Right? There are babies who are not part of the system yet. Right? It's not a problem. Right? But as that baby grows up over time, right, when the baby is born, right, title, description, location, right, that's it. Right? And also, that comes later. Right?
Right?
But as the baby grows up, it begins to accumulate descriptors, right? It's given a social, as soon as it's able to work, right, 2 months, social insurance number, or I guess use social security number, right? There's not even one single system, right? We use SINs, you use SSNs, right?
SIN sounds somehow more appropriate.
It really does, doesn't it?
Leftist, you know? Political radical, that comes around college age.
That comes around college age, right? And that's a tag. It's for internal use at the CIA. And that's okay, right? So it takes time. Some resources might be, you know, like number one with a bullet, right? They'll rise right to the top, right? You know? Other resources might take a lot of time. They're like the classics, right? The author is dead before anybody begins to recognize the value of this thing. That's okay, but as things go by, they accumulate this set of descriptions, and not all in one place. And it's important to keep in mind there's no one right way of describing or thinking of a resource. The information itself is all over the place. Look at the information about a person, right? Some of it's in the university archives, some of it's in the police station, some of it's in the government office, some of it's at your church, at your school, and ex-girlfriend's boxes or whatever, you know. It's all over the place. And what you see of a resource depends on how you look at it. So there's all kinds of different ways of looking at a resource. And it looks different depending on the perspective that you take. But it seems to me that's true of knowledge as well. And you know, all these things I say of resource, I think, apply equally in a theoretical stance to knowledge.
So that different perspective that's based on context captured by the regular expressions, is that where you actually see...
That's one aspect of it, right? That's capturing one kind of description in one context. Now, I would write that as a regular expression for audio chat and conferencing. Phil might write something different. Maybe he knows something over and above Skype. You might put in, I don't know, MSN networking, whatever. Well, probably not.
iChat,
yes. Yeah. And I should add that. So
you should add that, right?
Well, I should. So
there it is.
And I don't have a submit button. Oh, that's really silly. I know exactly what I've done, but that's funny.
So now, what has changed?
There's normally a submit button on that form.
So you have added this. What then has changed in the system? What's the consequence of adding that?
Yeah. What is the consequence of that? I have basically a lookup table, matching topics and items, or more accurately, topics and links. And also topics in my own posts. So I keep links that are simply harvested in one table, and I keep my own posts in another table. Learn that the hard way. What it'll do, when I hit submit, assuming there's a submit button there, which there normally is, what it'll do is it'll run through every link, you know, every description in the system, and anytime it finds a match, it'll flag that match, and then it just, you know... a lookup table.
So if I
whole set of
so
topics,
I see it appear in a list. In other words, is there?
Well, okay. Here are all the topics I've defined. Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. I should have been clearer. Here's conferencing. This is a page that extracts that. I've also linked it to Wikipedia just for fun. There's the description, of course, and here's the regular expression. And now here are the posts, and you'll find that each of these posts matches the regular expression. And then they're all linked to other topics, of course.
So those posts could be any object. Those posts could be an assignment. They could be
anything.
A project description. They
sure.
could be a test.
Now, what's supposed to happen, and this isn't current on the system at the moment, although it usually is, again, I'm right in the middle of rewriting this, but also the author and the name of the journal, I'll go to this where I think it is. No, I don't have them linked. But again, if you...
I see. So you're connecting people and resource in a link?
That's correct. No, I don't. Oh, I don't even have that set up. Okay. Let's try. I don't know why. I make a lot more typos on this keyboard than I think my other ones. Okay, I'm on this Lotus journal.
It takes a while for your fingers to learn.
Yeah. I don't think I've even indexed these. No. Anyhow, but you would see, if I had them indexed, right, you would see the name of the journal. I use the term journal very loosely to refer to websites, organizations, newspapers, magazines, blogs, any sort of, you know, I'll eventually break that down, but for now I just want it like that. But it would come up the same as topic. So when you saw the link on the site, you see the name, you click on the name, you get the little description of the person and all their posts. And then, you know, you can find out what topics that person writes about, all about. It's all just cross-indexing. So, and mostly I'm rewriting this right now. I had this all working, and then I took it all apart because I'm trying to make it faster. And I have the speed to do all kinds of caching in the back, so that's why it's faster now, but it's incomplete. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I really, really hate programming. Other times mm-hmm. I really love it, but it just takes so long.
What's the database underneath?
It's just a MySQL.
So whenever you have large online aggregated information collections, you have the classical Wikipedia problem, which is how do you know what's reliable and what isn't?
Mm-hmm.
Is that anything that comes into this system?
Well, that's why I did the whole thing about the semantics of networks, right? The reliability of the system is based on the properties of the network. And if the nodes of the network satisfy the conditions of diversity, openness, connectedness, and autonomy, then the resulting organization will be reliable.
I was thinking more of the reliability of the information. You know, the classic, somebody writes an article that's completely bogus and presents it as if they had a PhD
sure.
in the subject. Is there any way the system addresses that kind of...
No, because I think, like, you're thinking of one particular article, and I don't think of one particular article. I think of the whole set of articles that is delivered to you on that subject. And I consider the reliability of that. Because, you see, think about what the question that you're asking presupposes. That there is something that constitutes a reliable description of such and such, right? And I disagree with that right off the bat, right?
Well, you did have the previous one. You did say that the objectivity of this article is the question.
No, okay, that wasn't me.
That was Wikipedia.
That was Wikipedia.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
See, I just bringing
right. But you also had the notion of the individuals contributing observations about quality.
Yeah.
In the recommender context.
Well, that's right, exactly. And again, see, and you might now you so in a sense it sort of pushes the question back, right? What about the reliability of the ratings? But now we begin to look at the reputation of the people. You see, so it's never a yes no answer. Is such and such reliable? But it depends on who you ask. And it's even with Wikipedia, you get somebody who's a troll who puts whatever, right? It's reliable in a certain way, right?
But the nodes, I sort of agree. The nodes are the layers of communities.
Right. There was a project that, and may still be going on at Intel, where they layered into their email communication system a ranking of posts when it came to the utility of a message in answering the question that was posted. And they decided that no one would go to a website or anything like that, so they built it into the email system.
That's funny.
So that you could read something and just with a single click say, that was really useful to me. And they would aggregate the information about the authors, so that when somebody posted something, you could sort of have a ranking of whether or not you were a complete flake, or whether it's a flaky index, or whether or not you tended to say things that people thought were meaningful.
See, what I want to do is, with your communications like email, is they come into your system, and if you want it, it's like a resource, right? And so if you like it, you just keep it. Put it in your database, and if you don't like it, well, you delete it.
So that's just one of the things you can have there.
One of the things. I actually believe that a system set up like this can, in some sense, replace email, because once people have the capacity to aggregate, then they have the capacity to receive directed communication from other people. If I know all of you are aggregating, and I want to send a message to Phil, I just put in a thing that's tagged to Phil only, and you all aggregate from my site, but when Phil aggregates, he gets an extra item.
We can also replace RSS with email by just subscribing via email to RSS feeds.
Sure.
I think there's a problem, and you have to distinguish between things that you have to read and things that you might want to read when you have time. Because to me, that's my distinction, is I use my RSS reader just for things I might want to read when I have time, but the email is only critical communication.
I wish my email was like that.
No, but Josh brings up an interesting point, I think, because, this math, because certainly when you think about quality, reliability, how we, our behavior, when we listen, it's all based on and it's on an era on systems where information, the kind amount of stuff that came was very limited.
Right.
And we have to sort of rethink all that. Every method for checking reliability now is much more statistically based than rules based.
Right.
In fact, if there's anything rules based, it's only to do some very fine tuning.
Right.
So suddenly we have to rethink. There's this morass, abundance of information coming at you. How do you think about quality? How do you think about reliability? Because they're automatically, we use people are determining for the job. And like you say, you have a different sorting algorithm, and which so your behavior, because your starting premises that you're going to be inundated.
Right. So that, what you're suggesting, I think, is that you need to have this overlay of deterministic and a stochastic overlay, because there's some certain things that if I get a message from Susan Hockfield. And it's directed to me personally, I probably think I should read it, right? And I'm only likely to get in my lifetime one of these. But over and above that, so I need to somehow pull that out, and then no statistical analysis that will do that, right? Because that's a tough sample.
Well, would an analysis of the connections do that?
Well, that's possible.
Right, knowing who she is, knowing how she's connected to you, or connected to things that you're connected to.
I never really considered that connection, but yeah.
But then over and above that, there's the span factor. There's if the word Viagra is in it, you probably don't want to read it right off the bat. But maybe you do.
But maybe you do.
Maybe since I'm not able to do a study of medical uses of Viagra.
Yeah.
No, but I'm
well, again, that's why the content is not going to, this is a part of the thesis, the content itself is not going to be sufficient mm-hmm. to allow you to make such determinations. The content's too limited. You need these relations.
Yeah, and the nodes, I mean, when you have, the thing is, take the Susan Hoffman example,
right?
The chances are that that message, you have to remember the goal over here, the chances are that message is going to get to you even if you miss it.
Well, I agree with you. That's right. What about the science citation index metric? You know, like using the number of references to something as a measure of how useful or whatever you want to call it is.
Depends. Depends on the references. I mean, even now, people like will look at references and they'll say, "Well, yeah, they all came from D-rated journals. Who cares?" Or, and it depends on the reliability or the trustworthiness of the media or the medium as a whole. Are academic journals, papers in academic journals, the best way to find out what the best literature is? Well, there's a lot of disputes about that. I would certainly question that, particularly in things like this field.
So the way of establishing those relationships, are those relationships pretty much defined by your search string? Or, because I'm thinking that depending on the, take a subject that's highly controversial, I may want to favor a particular...
Yeah, weighting.
I might want to weight a particular mm-hmm. side mm-hmm. Rather than rely on some broad systemic kind of... Yeah.
Yeah, I can certainly imagine cases like creationism and evolution. There's a certain side of that debate I want to be showing up in my search results and not the other side, or global warming, same thing. Again, we need to draw the map in our head, right? Here's the resource. The resource is authored by so-and-so. So-and-so is associated with such-and-such a cluster of people. Such-and-such a cluster of people have certain properties. Like, for example, they are people that I tend to read. Or, for example, they are people that I like tend to recommend highly. There's going to be 18 or 20 different ways of getting at this. And then, so you look at all of these different things. And so now you have somebody you've never heard of writing a topic you don't know. This is the serendipity problem, right? Somebody you've never heard of writing on a topic you don't know, and you don't have a topic listing for any of that, but that person still shows up because that person worked with so-and-so, or that person uses such and such a phrase. This whole framing thing, all of these things have their own catchphrases, their own jargon, or their own code to express a point of view or a political opinion or whatever. It's like that open for business, right? So, when your town government says, "Oh, we're open for business," they might as well just put a big flag, conservative. I don't know if it's the same in the States, but that's the way it is in Canada, so you can always tell.
Well, we've just spent an hour talking, and that is the time we allotted for this discussion. And so before we go any further, I'd just like to thank Stephen for being willing to engage in this conversation with us. And those of you who want to hang around, you're welcome to. And those of you who want to grab lunch in about a half an hour with us, I haven't really picked a place or anything of that sort, but if you're interested in joining us, I imagine we'll try to get something over at Legal or something like that.
Thank you.
So those of you who are constrained and feel like you need to go, this is a good time. And the rest of you who would like to hang around for a minute, please do.
And thanks for coming. I really appreciate it. Makes me feel very welcome.
Thank you. I hope we can. I'm hopeful that we'll start to see more of these things internally. It's just sort of informal conversations about a topic that might have mutual interest, not necessarily a formal thing with a PowerPoint behind it and all the other stuff, the trappings, but just discussions on topics of interest. And if any of you have people and or topics that you would like to see, you should share that with us. Send it to me or VJ or Katie or somebody from the group of the OIT, and we'll try to find the serendipitous connections that that occur one now and again. Okay.
Thank you.
Just seeing if there's any new comments.